Ken Campbell of the Hockey News here, back with our Prospect Podcast. Prospect Podcast, that can be difficult to say sometimes. Joined, of course, as always, by our prospect prognosticator, our draft destroyer, our father of futures, Ryan Kennedy.
Well done.
How you doing, Ryan?
Pretty good.
Good.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me. Oh, thanks for coming and sitting in your kitchen.
Yeah.
We're doing this. We are currently doing this from Ryan Kennedy's kitchen.
You're literally getting in my kitchen.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking, which puts us right on to our first headline of the day.
Yeah.
I'm gonna put my hand over my right ear because that's what people do when they read headlines.
That's right.
The first headline of the podcast is, you know, Ryan, there's some crazy things happen at junior hockey sometimes.
Certainly.
I've always found that historically more so in the Quebec League than other leagues.
Yeah.
And once again, we've got kind of an interesting situation in the Quebec League in the first-round series between Moncton and Rimouski. Why don't you tell us a bit about it?
Well, yeah, and you're right. And shout-out to our mutual friend, Sanaya Sapergi, who often used the Twitter hashtag, because it's the Q. And I know that the folks of the Quebec League hated when people did this. But, yeah, just a lot of funny things seem to happen there. So, to set the stage... Moncton is playing Rimouski in the first round. Rimouski heavily favored. They were the higher seed by far. So the Oceanic are up 3-2 in the series, and head coach slash GM Serge Beausoleil, who would go on to be named GM of the year just days later.
Yeah, that's the topper of the whole thing.
Yeah. So he tells the press that the only difference in the regular season between the two teams was that Moncton's goalie, Mark Grammetbauer, played terribly, in so many words. It was stronger language.
I think he used a swear word to describe his season.
He did.
Yeah.
So, clearly, he was trying to get in Grammetbauer's head. I will tell you that it backfired because Mark Grammetbauer, the veteran goaltender, played amazing the next two games, stopped 57 of 61 shots. The Wildcats upset Rimouski, who are now out of the playoffs, and in the process, the league fined Beausoleil $2,500 for his comments. Just a lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
It was just pretty amazing. You talk about sort of instant karma and, bulletin board material.
Yeah.
And certainly Grammetbauer made Beausoleil eat his words there.
You know what's funny, Ryan, is I've covered junior hockey before. I don't anymore, but I've covered junior hockey before. And, like, what this guy got fined for is nothing compared to the stuff you used to hear from people like Wayne Maxner and Bill LaForge, and like they used to fight in corridors and like it was like, and now this kid, you know, he says basically this kid had a crappy season and it was obvious what he was trying to do, wasn't it?
Totally.
He was obviously trying to put all the pressure on the kid for the next two games, and it didn't work.
Yeah.
But then the guy gets fined for it. I'm sure that somewhere Bill LaForge is spinning in his grave going, a guy got fined $2,500 for that?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, the sort of postscript here that's interesting is Moncton moves on, and one of their players is up for the 2018 draft, Alexander Kovanov. Obviously came over from Russia. Now, very interesting because he was seen as potentially a high pick coming into the year, but had some very bad luck. When he was on vacation, he contracted hepatitis, much like Patrick Elias did a couple of years ago. And so he missed months and months. His Moncton debut was pushed back quite far, but he did play in the second half, put up some nice offensive numbers. But I was speaking with a scout today, and he was saying that, you know, Kovanov's engagement so far has been very disappointing, and, you know, he tried to be patient because he knew that the kid wasn't at full strength, and he was getting used to a new culture, a new team. There was a lot going on, but he needs to see more if he would even be comfortable suggesting that his team draft the kid at all, let alone high. So, with the Wildcats coming through against Rimouski, great opportunity for Kovanov to show off his array of skills, and not only that, but really kind of knuckle under and prove that he can be that consistent game breaker that he has the potential to be.
And I guess too, you know, Ryan, if a team's got a lot of picks, you never know, right? Like,
true.
They may be willing to gamble one on a guy that's much of a wild card.
Yeah.
Right. switching over to the WHL, the Regina Pats, who will be hosting this year's Memorial Cup, they'll be working on their breakouts quite a bit
yeah.
for the next little while. Yeah. They were defeated in the first round of the WHL playoffs by the Swift Current Broncos. Out in the first round, have an automatic berth to the Memorial Cup. Could be a replay of last year's embarrassment when the Windsor Spitfires were beat out in the first round and went on to win the Memorial Cup. Ryan, when I came in, I didn't see a soapbox anywhere, but I'm going to get up on one here.
Go
right now. This is wrong.
Mm.
This is wrong, Ryan, and it's about money. And that's all it's about. Don't tell me it's about anything other than getting as much money out of a host city as you can possibly get in exchange for giving them a Memorial Cup. This is another potential embarrassment for junior hockey. I don't like it. I think it's terrible, and I think it's a slap in the face to those other kids on those other three teams that will have busted their butts trying to, you know, work their way through the playoffs, getting hurt, playing every other night, you know, playing in intense situations while these guys sit back and practice for a month and put themselves in a better position to win this thing. I think it's wrong. I think it should be changed. And I think it's about money. And don't tell me that you can't do it any other way, because they used to do it every other way. And I think a really good way would be the host league. The top team in one conference plays the other team, the top team in the other conference, in the first round in what they call a super series, which is what they used to have a lot of times. So they would effectively get a first round bye, but they would play this super series, and whoever wins that super series hosts a Memorial Cup. That's the way it's worked in the past, and it's worked very well in a lot of ways. And I just, to me, this is about, you know, you can talk about the altruism of junior hockey all you want. You can talk about how these guys aren't in it for the money. But in this case, they are in it for the money. And that's why they're doing this. And it's wrong.
Yeah, it's so tough because, you know, these host teams, you do see them load up. And when they do award these bids, obviously the composition of the team comes into play. But when I look at Regina this year, and I do think that they look to be the best candidate to host. And this was a different hosting process because it is the 100th edition. So it wasn't a matter of, you know, well, it's the WHL's turn, so it's the WHL team.
Right.
Hamilton and Oshawa were also in on the bidding from the OHL. And when Regina got it, I said, okay, yeah, that makes sense. You know, they'll be pretty good next year. But for whatever reason, it never really clicked. I think the Pats, they kind of underachieved throughout the season, and they did bring in some nice talent as they went, as host teams often do. Libor Hájek, now a New York Rangers prospect, originally drafted by Tampa Bay. You know, he was one of the marquee pickups they got. Unfortunately, Hájek got hurt during the series. Jesse Gabriel, who's a Bruins pick, he missed games in the series as well. Swift Current's an amazing team. You know, we talk about Alexi Heponiemi,
yep,
Tyler Steenbergen.
Yep.
They had Stuart Skinner and Nett, the Oilers pick. But I know what you're saying, where this keeps happening. And, you know, Windsor had bad luck last year where they ended up playing London in the first round.
Right.
Who were the defending champs and had Tyler Parsons. That one felt like not as bad, but I totally see what you're saying, where why does this keep happening where the host team gets knocked out in the first round? And, you know, I know we've talked before about the year that Hamilton hosted, and they weren't. I believe they missed the playoffs.
Oh, they didn't miss the playoffs. They were the worst major junior. They were a historically bad major junior team.
Yeah.
So they took it away from them.
Right.
And they ended up with Oshawa and Kitchener in the Memorial Cup, an Oshawa team led by Eric Lindros. Well, not led by him. Actually, that was his first year.
Yeah.
They actually had a bunch of other players that were really good on that team, and that's the best Memorial Cup I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
That's some of the best. And that, actually, the final was great, but the round-robin game that went into, like, triple overtime between Oshawa and Kitchener of the round-robin of that tournament was literally one of the best hockey games I've ever seen.
Nice.
But to me, Ryan, like, when you do it this way, I think there's so many things that are unfair about it. Like, how could Owen Sound ever hope to host the Memorial Cup?
Right.
You know, here's a team that's really good, right? Yeah. They're well run. They do everything right. They get good players. They, you know, they develop guys and everything.
Mm-hmm.
They should have an opportunity to host the Memorial Cup. And they never do because they don't have, you know, the money-making, revenue-generating facility to do it.
Yeah.
So they may deserve it,
uh-huh.
but they don't get it because, you know, because they want to send it to bigger venues like Regina and next year, now Halifax.
Yeah. Now, Halifax just won the right to host next year, and I like it. It was, I believe it was between Halifax and Moncton, ironically. But if you look at Halifax, I think they are well-suited to host for next year, and here's why. If you look at the Mooseheads this year, obviously Philip Zadina is their best player. He likely won't be there next year.
No.
He'll be in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. But otherwise, they've got a really nice crop of 2018 draft prospects. Benoit Olivier-Gruel, Jared McIsaac, Alexis Gravel in net. So they have a goalie.
Yep.
Which is really key. They've got a couple of kids that are already drafted by the NHL who will be back next year, guys like Arnaud Durandeau and Joctan Chaney. They've got some nice kids that will be up for the draft next year as well, Raphael Lavoie. There's a kid, Justin Barron, on defense who's very young as well. So I feel like that team hasn't peaked. And, you know, they'll be able to add through the import draft because Zadina will leave. And I think Otto Sampi might leave. He could come back as an overager, if I'm not mistaken. He's a Tampa Bay pick. But they could even, you know, if he decides to go pro, then they could get two new imports.
Uh-huh.
And then, obviously, you know, they can add as they go during the season. But I really like the Halifax pick there. Hopefully that's a team that kind of breaks this host curse, and they actually go far next year. I think as we look at them now, they've got the personnel to do it.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen it happen. Ottawa did it 1 year, lost in the first round. I think, I don't know when Shawinigan lost it.
I think they were first round as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, and they beat London in the Memorial Cup final. It's just, to me, it's just not fair. And, I mean, there is a way around it, but it involves junior hockey making less money. So,
right.
So we'll be okay with that. Moving on to the under-18 Worlds, which are in a couple of weeks,
in
Russia.
Yep.
Team USA has announced their team for that tournament. They announced that the other day. Team USA, of course, which has had an enormous amount of success in this under-18 tournament, you know, names their team, and I mean, there's some intrigue here, isn't there? I mean, they obviously have some real confidence in some of their 16-year-old kids, or underage guys, including Jack Hughes, who was named to the team. Can you tell us a bit about some of these younger guys that we're going to see at the under-18s that won't even be up for the draft this year?
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, to start off, this is always a very NTDP-heavy team. This is what this program goes towards every year.
Right.
Sometimes you'll see one or two kids from outside the program.
If I'm not mistaken, this year there are none, though. They're all
correct.
NTDP guys.
All NTDP this year.
Yeah.
And the sort of new recruits are coming from the U-17s. Now, a lot of these kids have already been playing up with the U-18s. Jack Hughes, of course, centering the first line with Oliver Wahlstrom and Joel Farabee, and having an amazing run because of that. Well, he's making it happen just as much as they are. But five kids from that 2001 birth year, so you got Jack Hughes, who's the favorite to go first overall in 2019. Cole Caulfield, who is just like, let's just call him the next Johnny Gaudreau because he's like 5'6" and incredible. Alex Turcotte, who's a fantastic skater. Cam York, an excellent underrated defenseman. And then Spencer Knight, the goaltender, whom I have been told may be like the best American goaltending prospect in years.
Wow.
Great size, just an amazing pedigree. And so you got five players coming off the U-17 roster, joined by the likes of Wahlstrom, Farabee, Keandre Miller, Bodie Wilde.
Yeah.
Really good complement of 2018 draft selections.
Yeah, yeah.
you know, you're right. They're always the favorites because they're always at full strength. You know, Team Canada, I think they'll be pretty interesting this year because there's some nice younger kids that will be available. Plus, they're getting some nice luck with CHL playoffs because this is kind of like Canada at the Worlds, where the Stanley Cup playoffs are going on, so you never get full compliment. Yeah. But this year is going to be pretty hot.
Canada's going to have the whole
team. Yeah, it's going to be pretty hot. But you look at Canada, Ty Smith, who I wrote about on the website yesterday from the Spokane Chiefs, he'll be available. Alexis Lafreniere, who we talked about on the podcast last year, he was actually not available for the draft until 2020 because of his late birthday.
Right.
But he plays for Rimouski, who, as we know, are now out.
Yep.
So they could have Lafreniere. There's some really nice kids out west. It'll be interesting to see who they go with once Canada announces their roster. But the Americans, I mean, man, they look tough again.
What do you think the future is for Jack Hughes, the immediate future, Ryan? I mean, he's been drafted into the OHL, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, is there any chance he jumps to the OHL next year? Is he, you know, I don't know. Is he fast-tracking to get into college early? Is he, you know, because I'm wondering if, you know, if he's doing this, what he's doing as a 16-year-old playing for the under-18 team, you know, how much more can he grow next year being a year older? I'm wondering if maybe he needs to be challenged in major junior hockey, or maybe, I don't know, maybe he's fast-tracking and will play college hockey. I don't know. What do you think the future holds for him?
Okay, so here's what I'm hearing. Right now, there are certainly a lot of options, and his father, Jim Hughes, has held several different hockey jobs, at high levels, at the NHL level, so he knows what he's doing, obviously has his son's best interest in mind. The options on the table, Jack, he could fast track to the University of Michigan, where his older brother, Quinn, currently plays.
Right.
He could go to the OHL. Mississauga holds his rights, but those rights could always be traded.
Correct.
And then he could stick with the NTDP.
How about the Austin Matthews option, though, Ryan?
I just
thought of that just now as we were talking about it. How about, is there any possibility he could do what Austin Matthews did?
I haven't heard of that, and the one wrinkle with that is, keep in mind, Austin Matthews was a late birthday, and he couldn't legally play in Switzerland until he turned 18. So that's why he missed Zurich's first five games.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Okay.
So there are some little wrinkles.
Maybe that takes that away.
Yeah. From what, I mean, if I was a betting man, I think he returns to the NTDP right now because, Jack's not a big kid. He's certainly incredibly skilled. I believe he could be the next Patrick Kane, but an actual center. Obviously, Kane has made his name as a winger. The NTDP is famous for its off-ice training. So if you look at Jack Hughes, more time in the weight room, that's great. Because at the rate he's going straight to the NHL.
Sure.
So if he can get that, if he can get stronger, that's great. Also with the NTDP, they play older competition. So next year he's going to play a full slate of games against not only the USHL, but top-tier college programs. You know, they're always playing the Michigans, the Boston Universities of the world.
Right.
So I think that the world is his oyster. You know, as far as I know, he hasn't been taking classes to go early to the University of Michigan, which is something Zach Werenski did.
Mike Camilleri did it, too.
There you go.
Yeah.
So I haven't heard that he's done anything like that right now, but that could obviously change in the summer. I know Werenski was taking classes, basically right up until the time that he enrolled in the fall. Yeah. Like, it was close.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right? Because it's not an easy thing to do.
No.
But
especially when you're playing elite-level hockey.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it seems like there's lots of great options, but I wouldn't be surprised if he returned to the NTDP just because the things he needs, they can provide.
What's interesting, too, is Hughes is a dual citizen, correct?
I think so.
He could play for Canada, couldn't he? If he...
Not after this tournament.
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I mean, that's my point exactly, is as soon as he plays in this under-18 tournament, he's hitched his wagon to USA Hockey, and he's a USA Hockey player for the rest of his career.
Correct.
Which is significant if, in fact, he would have had that choice.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, moving along, we now have an interview that our Ryan Kennedy did with Mason Marchman of the Toronto Marlies. Bit of an interesting kid, you know. I mean, wasn't drafted, signed as a free agent, now is moving, you know, through the chain in an organization that where it's going to be tough. He's in tough. He's in tough to get on the roster, but he's also in a good spot because he's in a winning situation with a very good coach and a good organization. Mm-hmm. So, and in case you're wondering, he is indeed Brian Marchman's son, and much to the relief of any hockey player who has knees, which I last time I checked is all of them.
Right.
He actually doesn't play like his father.
No.
So,
yeah.
So here we go. This is the an interview that Ryan Kennedy recently did with Mason Marchman of the Toronto Marlies.
I'm here with Mason Marchman of the Toronto Marlies. And Mason, recently you signed your first pro contract. How exciting was that for you?
It's very exciting. I've been, you know, pushing for it my whole life, and it's just exciting to finally get it.
Now, you know, you spent some time in the ECHL. It's been like a pretty good long journey for you. Just curious, what is the ECHL experience like compared to the AHL experience?
It's a pretty tough league. You got to really, you know, watch out. There's some big guys out there that really want to put you in your place. So, but it's just a They're pretty close. I mean, the speed's close. It's a little bit different for systems, but it's a pretty decent league.
Now, you had a pretty good major junior career, but you know the pro leap is very big. How important was it for you to get ice time when you were playing with Orlando in the ECHL?
Yeah, that was huge for me. I mean, probably helped my development a lot, just getting down there and getting some ice time and feeling comfortable with the puck in situations that you know I should be comfortable with the puck. So it was just a good experience.
Is it important to figure out your role as a pro player? I mean, a lot of guys are scorers in junior, but is it important to figure out what you can do at the next level when you're trying to develop yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, that's one thing in your first couple of years that you got to figure out is what kind of player you're going to be. And I'd hope that, you know, I got a bunch of different tools in the bag.
Right on. Now, travel is always a big thing when you're in the pro ranks. And I guess being in Orlando, it's not too bad because it's sunny in the winter and there are some other southern teams. Is the travel much different between the ECHL and the AHL, which is still kind of bustly?
When I was in the ECHL, we didn't travel too much, so it wasn't. I wouldn't really be able to tell you.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Now you come from NHL pedigree. Your father, of course, Brian Marchman, and he's still in the game in a scouting and an executive capacity. How nice is it to have somebody that not only was in the NHL but is still part of the game?
Yeah, it's definitely an advantage. But we don't talk about too much about that kind of stuff. He just comes and, you know, he'll throw in the odd pointer about my game, but it's we don't talk too much about hockey, so.
Fair enough. Now, at any point in your career so far, has your name kind of rung bells on the ice because your dad was such a hard-hitting player?
Yeah, I get some chirps sometimes. You'll never be as tough as him or blah, 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 whatever. But it doesn't really bother me. We're different players, so.
Now, this edition of the Marlies has been one of the best in recent AHL history. What do you think has contributed to the success of the team?
Got such a deep team, just everyone's such a, you know, elite player, and everyone can play in basically every position, so it's just it's huge because everyone wants to push each other because we're all, you know, pushing for the same thing, right? So it's just nice to keep it competitive, and I feel like we want to win here, so.
And Coach Sheldon Keefe has done quite a bit in his short period of time with the Marlies. What do you like about him as a coach?
He's a straight to the point guy, and he'll let you know what he's feeling, and he's really good at, you know, sometimes being hard on you and sometimes, you know, like letting you know, like, on your own. And he gets into the game too, so it's nice to see that.
And finally, Toronto's first round pick last year, Timothy Liljegren, playing for the Marlies, on the blue line. What have you seen from him in his first North American season?
He's an unbelievable skater. He moves the puck great. His shot's awesome. He's just he's an all around player, and he's just got to develop into the player that he's going to be. Can't wait.
Excellent. Thanks so much for doing this.
No problem. Absolutely.
We're back to the draft spotlight part of our dance program here on the podcast. And our draft spotlight for this year's draft is a defenseman that you, unless you're probably a hockey nerd, you probably haven't really heard of him. His name is Nicolas Beaudin. He's a defenseman for the Drummondville Voltigeurs of the QMJHL. And Ryan, you know, you've talked to some scouts about him. I talked to some scouts about him too. I'm hearing he's probably one of these tweeners when it comes to the first round, somewhere in the 25 to 40 range. You know, either may, you know, jump up into the first round if a team is willing to, you know, take that chance, or may slide early into the second round. Not a big kid, skates well, really smart, not terribly physical, a small defenseman. You know, so, I mean, there are guys who like him, and I've talked to guys who are not so high on him, but what are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I've heard many of the same things, sort of a, you know, probably a second round guy, because he does have a bit of a slight frame, and there's only so much you can do about that. But the comment I really liked from one of the scouts I talked to was he makes passes that other defensemen just don't see. You know, he's got that great passing vision, and I think that's a very coveted thing these days, where, you know, your defensemen really have to be involved in your transition game, in your offense. And he was a point per gamer this year for Drummondville.
Right.
Actually led them in scoring. And, you know, had Joe Valeno been with the team all season, maybe he would have been their leading scorer.
Right.
But he wasn't.
Right.
So Beaudin wins. 7 points in 5 playoff games so far. So he's keeping it going in the postseason. The thing he needs to work on right now is getting more power in his stride.
Right.
And, you know, he already skates well, so he's got a good foundation. But it's just a matter of getting stronger and, you know, getting that lower body in a position where he can get more out of that, those natural gifts that he already has.
There's an interesting team that has 4 second-round picks next year. And they are called the Montreal Canadiens.
Very true.
Canadiens have 4 second-round picks.
Wow.
And so you never know. You may see the Canadiens either grab them in the second round or package a couple of those second-rounders to move up and maybe into the latter part of the first. I don't know. But it's funny, you know, the scouts that I've talked to, there's one scout told me, you know, he said that this kid's really coming on. And he does things that maybe average hockey fans don't notice, but scouts really notice, and he's really picking it up. Another guy said one of his concerns was that he's a late birthday, right?
Uh-huh.
So he's a little older than the kids in the draft now, and he's still kind of behind in terms of the physical sense and the strength and everything.
Right.
And that actually really, really concerns this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very concerned about whether or not this guy's ever going to really be big and strong enough to, you know, to play in the NHL.
Right. And it's interesting because, you know, when you get to that sort of 25 to 40 range, it's funny how things kind of work out, where if you're a team picking at the end of the first round, you know, almost always you're one of the best teams in the NHL.
Right.
So do you go with a sort of safe player where he has some nice tools but not like a ton of upside? Or because you already have a good team, do you shoot for the fences and go with somebody who's a little more raw? And again, you know, I was talking to a scout today and he was like, that's exactly how you do it, is, you know, the players that you kind of know are going to be pros, they end up sliding a bit. And the players that have elements that you really, really like tend to bump up a bit. And the name that comes to mind recently is Morgan Frost, who Philadelphia took in the first round with their second pick, because obviously they got Nolan Patrick. But, you know, some people saw Morgan Frost as a second rounder, but Philly really liked him, and they really liked, you know, the elements that were in his game. And he has been one of the best players in all the OHL this year with Sault Ste. Marie.
That's looking pretty good.
Yeah, sometimes it pays off.
Exactly. Okay, so now we'll move to our team spotlight. And the spotlight this week is on the Chicago Blackhawks, who, it's hard to be optimistic at the moment if you're a Chicago Blackhawks fan. They've obviously, you know, really hit a major pothole here in terms of their NHL team. We have them ranked 29th as an organization in terms of future watch. So, present, not such great shakes. Future is a bit dicey, but there are, obviously there are always some gems there. One of them is probably a guy by the name of Dylan Sakura, who came out of Northeastern, signed late, has played this year, has made his NHL debut with the Chicago Blackhawks. I think he had an assist last night in their game. They beat St. Louis 4-3, which really messes up St. Louis's
situation. It was just cruel.
Yeah, and he had an assist in that game. So, I mean, they do have some stuff there, but I get the sense that Chicago's still paddling upstream a little bit.
Yeah, and they do have two first-rounders in 2018, thanks to the Ryan Hartman trade with Nashville. So I think that's going to help. Starting with Sakura, he was part of a deadly line for the Huskies this year with Adam Gaudette and Nolan Stevens. Mm-hmm. And Sakura, I would say he's kind of emblematic of the Hawks system as a whole right now, where he doesn't have a lot of size, but he's pretty skilled. And, his vision, his playmaking are just excellent. And, he'll need time to adjust to the NHL game for sure. And, I like that he's getting his chance now to sort of cut his teeth. But I think there's some nice things there. And, the Hawks, it's going to be tough for a couple of years as that great vaunted old core start to move into their mid and late 30s. But now is the time to sort of
long-term deals making big money.
Yeah, exactly. You can't move them. But I think Sakura is he's one of the top guys there. And what's interesting right now is that Chicago has barely any major junior prospects at the top of their pile.
And the only one they have is European.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Henry Jokiharju, playing for the Portland Winterhawks, we had him as their top prospect in Future Watch, ranked 68th overall. And again, for a defenseman, not really big, 6'1", 180, which is pretty decent. But he's a puck-moving defender, fantastic season for the Winterhawks. 71 points in 63 games. I believe it was 59 assists, so almost an assist per game. Pretty great. Portland's still going in the WHL playoffs, so he can keep going on that. But other than that, a lot of European prospects and a lot of NCAA prospects.
Yeah, look, Ma, no Canadians.
Yeah.
Like I don't see a single one.
Ian Mitchell.
Oh, Ian Mitchell.
Ironically,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, he played in Denver, but he is a Canadian. Okay, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and Ian Mitchell, actually a very nice surprise. Early on in the season, we had Denver coach Jim Montgomery on the podcast, and he was talking about just the amazing amount of maturity and playmaking ability that Ian Mitchell brought to the Pioneers as a freshman. And it's funny because, this was one of those selections in the second round where you said, okay, well, he's coming out of the Alberta Junior A League. He'll need, years. But then he steps right in on the defending national champions and has a tremendous impact. So I think the key for Ian Mitchell is next season, Denver they've lost a lot of talent. Henrik Borgstrom's gone. Dylan Gambrell's gone.
Yep.
There's going to be a lot of turnover in that program. And for Ian Mitchell, I think that presents a lot of opportunity. They're going to need him to be very good next year, and I think if he can build off that, that bodes very well for him.
What I like about this whole thing with Chicago is, you know, with a guy like Secura in particular, you've got to get these guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're not picking high in the first round, so you're not getting the top prospects. That's just the way it works,
mm-hmm.
and that's the way it's always worked and always will work. But Dylan Secura was a sixth-round pick.
It's wild.
You know, sixth-round pick,
yeah.
almost a seventh-round pick, late in the sixth round. You've got, you and your scouting department have got to hit those home runs every once in a while. I've always said every draft, you know, I mean, every draft is almost the same. You know, we talk about how, you know, it's a great draft, or it's a weak draft, or it's an okay draft, or it's a this draft, or that draft.
Yeah.
One third of the first round is going to be really good. One third of the first round is going to be okay. And the other third of the first round is not going to be so good.
Yeah.
And then there's going to be a guy picked in the fifth or sixth round who ends up in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
You know? and so, I mean, if, and I'm not saying that Dylan Secura is going to be in the Hall of Fame, but,
right.
but, you know, if they can get a, you know, a service, even a serviceable player, like a really mm-hmm. good, decent sort of second line player out of the sixth round, that's what you've got to do.
Yeah. And that's a nice segue to, my favorite player in the Hawks system, Tim Soderlund, who was actually passed over entirely in the draft before Chicago nabbed him. And they got him 112th overall. And I wrote an article earlier this year where I said, I think Tim Soderlund is the next Victor Arvidsson. And not only – it's funny. The parallels are, like, spooky where, you know – both played for Schleftia, wore the same number, have the same build, play the same great style where, you know, they give it all every shift, they've got skill. If I'm not mistaken, they were both passed over in the draft and then taken 112th overall.
Man.
It's just weird.
Mind blown.
Shit, mind blown, yeah. Somewhere there's a Twitter gif or meme about this. But, you know, Tim Soderlund played in two World Juniors for Sweden. I thought he looked great in both.
Yeah.
You know, the line he had.
You really like this guy.
He's really effective.
Yeah.
He's really effective. I thought he was excellent for the Swedes. You know, again, you know, his line always came to play, and they always gave 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think he has so many nice elements. And here's a guy that the Hawks found in the draft later on, and he could turn out to be a real gem for them.
Yeah, he was really good in Buffalo, wasn't he? Like, he was really good in the World Juniors.
Yeah.
Got that shorthander in the final game, eh? Yeah.
And that's his game. That's you get at a Tim Soderlund.
Yeah. Well, again, another guy, as you say, I mean, goes through seven rounds one year, gets picked in the – you know, in the third the next year, and, you know, that's how you build your team. That's especially when you're a team that's been picking so high the way they have.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a lot of European talent on this, among these prospects, isn't there, Ryan? And
mm-hmm.
including a guy who, if he ever makes it, I don't know how they're going to fit his name on the back of his sweater. Andre Altibarmek.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's one of those names where once you figure out how to say it, it becomes so, like, mnemonic for you.
Yeah.
Altibarmakian. It's practically poetic. But this is another guy who has passed over entirely the first time he was eligible for the draft. And, again, not a lot of size, but very skilled. And, again, you know, I thought he was – he was very good in the CHL Russia series this year. You know, the World Juniors, I thought he was good, but Russia overall, they were just kind of okay. And they never really got on track, and they got knocked out early. But, you know, there's a lot to like offensively about him. Similarly, Archer Kayamov, another one of their picks, basically the same build. And, you know, had a pretty decent World Juniors. And these are guys that, again, you're not going to see them next year for the Hawks. You might not even see them the year after that. But if they can bring them over here eventually, get them to play in the AHL for Rockford for a bit, find their way on the smaller ice, I think they have some nice elements where even though they don't have a ton of size, it's obvious nowadays that you don't need that in the NHL, particularly at forward, if you've got smarts. And, you know, for Chicago, as we said, you know, you do have those guys on the long-term deals, but they're going to need to fill some roster spots in the next couple of years. And to have that internal competition, I think, is very good, because right now, if you look at the Rockford IceHogs in the AHL, they're a so-so team in the standings, and, you know, there's not a lot of players that are kind of rising to the surface. So there's opportunity there.
So are we going to talk about them?
Yeah, there's a couple of players that I think are at least worth noting.
Him. When I say him, I mean Chad.
Chad Chris. Yes, our favorite office saying, because of the way he was announced when Chicago took him at the draft. We even had an old web editor, Ian Denemy, who was at the draft with us that year, who like tried to Zapruder. It was like an audio Zapruder to find the call, because it was on the second day. But it just sounded so smooth when Chicago announced that they were taking Chad Chris.
There are some of those inside jokes that like no one gets, and that's one of them. But that's a big one in our office.
It's huge. Yeah, it's almost too big at this point. But yeah, Chad Chris at Boston University. Great athleticism. This is the type of player where, you know, we've talked about the Terriers a lot, because they graduate so many NHL prospects, and a lot of them end up leaving early. But I think Chad Chris has the opportunity to really be one of those good, important upperclassmen where, again, doesn't have a lot of size, but he can handle the puck, and he can move it up the ice, and you don't have to rush him. I think he's the type of kid that you want to see him wearing a letter, maybe for a couple of years at BU.
Yeah.
And he can be important. And once he turns pro, you know you're getting a kid that gets it.
Right. And he's in a good program. I mean,
exactly.
So you're not worried about how he's developing or anything like that. All right, Ryan, I think that pretty much handles the Chicago Blackhawks for us. And so that brings us to the end of our program for this week. Lots of cool things going on, though. I mean, at this time of the year with future NHLers and prospects, we've got the Frozen Four going this weekend, which should be a lot of fun. We've got the OHL draft, where Quinton Byfield is expected to get picked first and sign with the Sudbury Wolves.
Yahoo! Yes.
So lots of big stuff going on. And and if you want to keep track of prospects, we're always on top of those things with our special issues like the Future Watch, and of course coming up will be the draft preview, which is always a big one for us. And but in the meantime, we'll stay on top of things, and we'll talk to you next week.